Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Robert Crowther at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. According to a recent nationwide survey, more than two-thirds of atheists and one-third of agnostics believe that, quote, the findings of science make the existence of God less probable. And even nearly half of self-identified theists believe that, quote, the findings of science are neutral with regard to the existence of God. But what if there is another option? What if the discoveries of science actually point towards and lend support for belief in God? That was the impetus for a recent conference, the Dallas Science and Faith Conference 2019. And joining me to talk today more about that is one of the scholars who presented at that conference, Discovery Institute Senior Fellow Jay Richards. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Rob.
I understand that this was a pretty big conference with over 1,000 attendees, so that must have been pretty exciting.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, if you think about it, this was a Friday night, all day Saturday event in January in Dallas, Texas, and there were well over 1,000 people, and they stayed for the whole thing. And some people drove from as far away as Indiana and Arkansas. There were even some people that flew from California and Delaware. So it was really a lot of fun to be part of the event.
Wow. I mean, that is gives it quite a national flavor, having people come from all over the country like that.
It really does. I mean, a number of people, you know, some of it I know was the draw of Eric Metaxas, who interviewed Steve Meyer on Friday night. So the event really started out with one of Eric Metaxas's so-called Socrates in the City events, in which he basically sits and interviews a guest for 90 minutes. And it was they recorded it for video and YouTube and everything. But I know a lot of people came to hear him. But that's actually, or at least that's what we were telling ourselves. At least that's what I was saying. I guess a lot of people came out to see Eric Metaxas. But there was no drop-off on Saturday. And so people stayed to hear Steve Meyer talk about cosmology and me talk about astronomy and even chemist James Tour in the afternoon talk about chemistry and stayed after until, you know, 4:30 waiting to have books signed. And so that was initially I thought, wow, Eric Metaxas is a big draw. But by the end of the day on Saturday, I realized, no, actually, a bunch of people were here, yes, to see him, but also to learn more about intelligent design and about the idea that you know, science is not only not hostile to faith, but actually might in some way be supportive of it.
Wow. With all of those people, Steve Meyer, James Tour, Eric Metaxas, it would be hard to narrow down what might be the best part. And I do want to talk to you a little bit more about what you presented, but other than that, what was the highlight for you?
I'd have to say the enthusiasm of people who had read many ID books and came from hours away. I mean, remember what was happening this last weekend with weather in the Midwest. People knew that, and yet they got on planes, they got in cars, drove to Dallas, you know, 10, 12 hours away, because of their enthusiasm. And, you know, those of us that are in the intelligent design movement, often what we experience is kind of hostility on social media, and we don't always get this kind of affirmation. So I have to say from, a wide range of ages too, people, you know, there was about an 11-year-old girl buying a copy of The Privileged Planet from me, and I saw she had Steve Meyer's big, thick signature in the cell under her arm. You know, homeschooled elementary school student that's into this stuff, all the way up to, you know, I think some 80-year-olds. And so it was just, you know, honestly, it was just a lot of fun, and it was encouraging to have people come from all around the country for this.
So you presented on cosmological fine-tuning. Is that right?
Yeah. Steve Meyer started out actually on Saturday morning talking about the evidence for a cosmic beginning and the evidence for Big Bang cosmology. I transitioned then and talked about the fine-tuning of the physical constants and the initial conditions at the beginning of the universe, and then spent most of my time actually talking about the evidence from the book I co-authored with Guillermo Gonzalez, The Privileged Planet, which we talk about the fine-tuning that you need within a fine-tuned universe for both life and Discovery. And though I was one there officially speaking, we ended up having a surprise appearance by my co-author, Guillermo Gonzalez, who had come down actually for, we had a dinner the night before. And so he came back and then he joined Steve Meyer and me, you know, with a Q&A with the audience to discuss all the stuff from astronomy and cosmology. And Steve and I were both glad because we got a couple of complicated questions about the speed of light and some things. We thought it was actually really nice having Guillermo on stage with us.
Yeah, it's nice to have like a really smart, world-renowned astronomer who can, you know, sort of pick up the ball if you are not feeling like you want to talk in depth about the speed of light, and I wouldn't.
No, that's right. It's I love having Guillermo on stage because I can always punt the hard questions to him.
So you guys spoke through the middle of the day and then had a Q&A. And then was it James Tour that sort of wrapped things up on Saturday?
It was James Tour that wrapped things up. And I've been with him a few times in sort of private academic, you know, symposia and things like that. But this was not a conference like this, as you can imagine, with over 1,000 people. You know, it wasn't a bunch of scientists gathered together. And so I honestly thought, oh, wow, how's this going to go? And when he started talking, he had these slides that had were like 10-point font and maybe 300 words on each slide. And I initially thought, oh, no, this is the worst slideshow I've ever seen. And then I realized he was doing it for effect because he was trying to show – he was talking about the origin of life. And he thought, okay, I want to sort of translate this for lay people. And he thought what he wanted to communicate is that any kind of directional chemical reaction, if a chemist is wanting to get a series of things to happen in a chemistry lab, he's going to have to really, really control the conditions. And it's actually really hard to do a lot of this stuff. And so he just gave a few examples of, say, 2 of 25 steps you would need to develop some kind of interesting chemical compound. And so he read some of these things, you know, from sort of instruction manuals and papers on these reactions. And the effect, rather than saying, okay, I can't follow this slide, was, wow, I can't even follow this one slide. And this is just 1 of 28 steps that you would need. Mm. So by the end of his talk, what you got was this very strong impression that, look, these prebiotic warm, wet pond experiments and stories that materialists often tell, that just dies in the face of 1,000 complications when it comes to actually traversing that space, getting you from chemistry to a first reproducing cell. And Tour is a world-renowned scientist, well-qualified to make the argument. But what was funny is that he managed to make the technicality of the science work for him in a general audience, and he was incredibly animated. I mean, anybody that knows him knows he's a calm, measured guy, kind of like you'd imagine a chemist being, but he was absolutely on fire when he was speaking before the audience. So it ended up being really a lot of fun. And then I can say, those of us that spoke, I mean, we were, by the end of the conference, it was still a good hour, hour and a half talking to people and signing books and things like that. And nobody left. I mean, as Steve Meyer always does, he waited until the last student was finished asking a question before he left. And that's something great that Steve does. And so, but that shows you the kind of enthusiasm, because some of the people hanging around still had to get in the car and drive to Little Rock.
Yeah. I have seen James Tour speak, and I should mention for people that may not be familiar with him, he is a world-renowned organic chemist at Rice University. And the thing that is cool about what he does is he was showing us in a presentation last year about the molecular machines that they build inside the cell. And that's pretty amazing in and of itself. But then you find out that he races them against other labs who also build these machines that are like little cars. And they race them inside the cell. And apparently he has a very good racing record.
He does. And I mean, that was, he sort of started off his talk talking about some of these things just because it's really cool. This kind of nanomolecular engineering, really, in which he's making these little structures that are basically a molecule thick that can race on the surfaces of cells and things like that. And so it's just very impressive. And it's actually an area that non-scientists don't know a lot about, but material science and this kind of nano engineering, this is a huge area. And he's got something like 600 scientific papers to his name. Mm-hmm. So he really is just one of this kind of small class of world-class scientists.
Right. And you expect that maybe you're going to get overloaded with an academic presentation. But like you mentioned, he's super animated. He's funny. He's really engaging. And he takes these complex things and people get to understand them pretty easily. I mean, if I'm figuring out what he's talking about, then that's pretty good.
Well, and the fact that, I mean, oh, the other thing I'd forgotten. Okay. So think about this, or, you know, this chemist from Rice with 600 scientific papers. He got a standing ovation by the people gathering at this conference at the end. So that just confirms what you said. They just really managed to resonate, and people, I think, came away, because, you know, when you're getting hour long science talks, you usually don't retain a whole lot of the details weeks later. But I think what he managed to do, what he wanted to communicate, I think will stick with people long term.
Yeah. Well, we have been discussing the Dallas Science and Faith Conference 2019, and I'm guessing that title means that there is likely to be a Dallas Science and Faith Conference 2020 as well.
That's actually in the discussion. There's already some venues that have been reaching out.
All right.
I honestly thought, wow, okay, we've already got 1,000 people. Can we do these more than once? But there actually was a lot of interest in doing more, because as we mentioned, you know, you just had a few speakers and there's a heck of a lot more interesting science to cover.
Sure. So lucky for the folks in Dallas, they can go back again next year. But lucky for everyone else is the fact that you mentioned that this conference was video recorded. And it will be made available, I think, in two parts. One is going to be the Friday night Socrates in the City with Eric Metaxas and Stephen Meyer. And that will be available through the Socrates in the City website, I'm pretty sure. And then Discovery will be making available the Saturday portions of the conference on the Discovery Science News YouTube channel sometime later this year.
Terrific.
Right. And Discovery hosts conferences similar to this one all the time. And it is interesting. Often there are people who are like, wow, you know, my view got changed or substantially reinforced in some way from what I was thinking when I showed up here tonight or today. So it's interesting that they can have quite an impact when people are there. But then that continues, you know, the video goes out and there are other conferences that people can go to. So it's amazing that that is has the impact that it does.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, of course, what's funny is that none of our talks were particularly religious in nature. They were just arguments for purpose and design. But people that know something about the history of science also know that this idea of a warfare between science and religion is a complete myth invented by materialists in the mid-19th century.
Right.
If you look at the actual founders of modern science, virtually all of them were either conventionally religious or very seriously religious, many of them quite devout Christians. That's just the historical facts. And so no one should be intimidated or buffaloed by this so-called war between science and religion. Yeah, there is a conflict between materialism and theistic religion and pretty much any other religion. That should be obvious, but we don't want to mistake science itself and the good of science for this kind of materialistic ideological parasite that often attaches itself to science.
And if people are interested in that topic, as I mentioned, Discovery hosts conferences similar to this one all the time. And if you'd like to attend in person, the next major conference like this one is in April in Philadelphia. It's the annual Westminster Conference on Science and Faith. And this year, I know that it is going to feature prominently Michael Behe, who will present his latest book, Darwin Devolves, which comes out in February. And you can learn more about that and pre-order the book at darwindevolves.com. There's some great perks for folks who pre-order there. Will you be at Westminster this year, Jay? I know you've spoken at that conference in the past.
I have. I won't actually be there this year. I really wish that I could be. I actually have a conflict, but I have to say I'm reading Mike Behe's new book, Darwin Devolves, right now. I'm about two-thirds of the way through it, and it is an absolutely terrific book. I haven't actually even heard him speak on it. So anybody that's anywhere near Philadelphia and Westminster, if they have time, they really should try to make it to the conference.
Yes. For more about that Westminster conference and other Discovery conferences around the country and even internationally, you can go to discovery.org and click on events. Or maybe even better is to become a regular visitor to Evolution News and Science Today. That's at evolutionnews.org. And that site covers all of these events, alerts you to when they are open for registration, gives information about them, what's coming up next, and so on. And you can get all of that at evolutionnews.org. So again, thank you very much, Jay, for being with us to tell us about the Dallas Science and Faith Conference.
Thank you, Rob. Great to be with you.
For ID the Future, I'm Robert Crowther. Thanks for listening.
In September 1906, nearly a quarter of a million people flocked to the Bronx Zoo in New York City. Many came for a startling new exhibit in the zoo's monkey house. But it wasn't a monkey they came to see. It was a man. His name was Oda Benga, from the African Congo. The riveting new documentary, Human Zoos, tells his story and shines a light on America's forgotten history of scientific racism. Oda Benga was one of thousands of human beings put on public display throughout America in the early 20th century. Often touted as evolutionary missing links between ape and man, these native peoples from around the world were harassed, demeaned, and jeered at, all with the enthusiastic support of the scientific community. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. Learn more at humanzoos.org or get the film at Amazon or Amazon Prime today.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.